The next case is Patelco Appellant versus Department of Labor and Industries. Response.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Josias Flynn from Riddell Williams on behalf of Appellant Patelco, Inc. And I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
2 minutes.
This case is about what is substantial evidence sufficient to find that an employer has not satisfied the unpreventable employee misconduct defense. And it's important to note that the substantial evidence test looks at the record as a whole. So there can be an instance where there's some evidence that may not support the defense, but when the record is considered as a whole, that defense is still met. And Patelco contends that is what happened here.
And help me understand what exactly it is that, because this is the affirmative defense that Patelco had the burden of proving.
Yes, Your Honor.
The WAC requires this pad, if I understand it, and there was no pad on the truck. So
correct.
Why don't you lose at that point?
There was testimony that there were, that Patelco does have pads, and that wasn't refuted, and that they are available by calling the safety coordinator.
So you're saying that the lead person at the scene should have not had the people get out of the truck, they should have called and gone and get the pad?
When they before they got to that actual scene, they showed up to a warehouse, essentially, where they get their materials, and at that point they said they didn't see one on the truck that they normally use. And at that point, they have safety coordinators who are available 24 hours a day for emergencies and could have been contacted for that.
What about also on the record, I think that foreperson said that they've never been trained in this. Didn't they say they didn't know about the pad?
No, there was some initial testimony that they couldn't remember what training they had, but after their recollection was refreshed, they reviewed their records of training and materials presented at that training and said, oh, yeah, I do remember being trained on what's called an EPC, equipotential zone.
So the trier of fact could have found that while they received training, it wasn't sufficient training to cause them to know what to do at the time the emergency arose.
That is one potential thing the trial court could have.
Okay, and not the trial court, but the hearing officer. The hearing officer reached that conclusion, well, why would it be an abuse of discretion?
Well, just given the record as a whole.
Maybe most people would reach a different answer, but it seems like you concede a reasonable person could reach that answer.
Yeah, potentially. And one other important...
Isn't that the end of the case?
Just because the other evidence that I've talked about, so as a whole, Patelco would contend that that one piece of evidence, when compared against the record as a whole, wouldn't be enough to defeat the defense.
As a matter of law.
Correct. And one other thing that's important to note here is the rule at issue is called... requires employers to set up an equipotential zone. It's a way to protect against accidental electrocution. That method came into place around 2000, but before that, all workers used what's called bracket grounding, and that's what the employees in this case used and had used before and used for over 20 years. They testified and never saw anyone injured with that method. So for this particular rule, I think it was difficult for Patelco to, even though the employees agreed they were trained on it, I think it was difficult for some of the employees to take that to heart and change some of the things they were doing. But Patelco did provide the training on the new method.
So is this the new safety methods for old dogs don't apply?
I think that's how some of the employees looked at it.
Does the law find any embrace of that?
Not from the employer's perspective, no.
Wasn't part of the hearing officer's ruling that the manual that was given to the employees didn't really reflect what the WAC requirement was?
There was some testimony about that. Patelco has operations not only in Washington but other states. Its parent company is headquartered out in Texas, and their main safety manual is based on OSHA's requirements. And OSHA requires that states can regulate this area of law. Their rules have to be at least as good as OSHA's or more restrictive. And in this particular case, Washington has some additional rules that are OSHA, our national rules. So that's what's in the big training manual, but the safety coordinator did testify that at training and at new hire orientation, they mentioned the differences between OSHA and WSHA that are reflected in the training manual, because there are not many. So unless your honors have any further questions, I'll reserve the rebuttal. Thank you.
You have 4 minutes.
May it please the court, I'm Anastasia Sandstrom, Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the Department of Labor and Industries. Substantial evidence supports the board's determination that the rigorous four-part test was not met, and this court should affirm. Before I go into each element of the test, I want to point out two things. First, that the test here is substantial evidence. Patelco points out in its briefing and in its argument that there's two points of view. There's evidence that there was mats on the truck. There's evidence that their mats weren't on the trucks or in the yard. On the substantial evidence standard of review, the testimony must be viewed in the light most favorable of the prevailing party, the department. And so this court must accept the foreman's testimony that the pads were not on the truck, the pads were not in the yard. Similarly, this court must accept the testimony that the training didn't train bracket grounding enough to know that the workers should know that they shouldn't use bracket grounding over the EPZ. So this court must accept that testimony as true under that standard. Secondly, in the reply brief, Patelco mentions that it believes that bracket grounding is a form of temporary protective grounding. It is not. That's found at the record at 22, 24, and 76. It's simply two different things. It's incorrect. First, to prove the defense of unpreventable employee misconduct, the employer must show that it provided all equipment. It did not provide the pads. It conceded in its argument that the pads should have been used in its in the testimony of Larry Roop. He said there should have been a pad on the truck. The foreman's testimony was there wasn't a pad on the truck. And the representation that the foreman could have simply called the safety director and asked for it, that is not a representation that's found in the record. Maybe Patelco wishes they had done that, but that's certainly not something that's in the record. And it doesn't meet the standard. This was at night. There was no one there in the yard to ask, but the foreman said it wasn't in the yard. So the equipment needs to be available to the workers, and under the substantial evidence standard review, really the inquiry ends there. And I would note that the department raised this very argument in its brief of respondent at the trial court. Patelco, in its reply at the trial court, did not defend on the fact that they didn't provide a mat. There's simply no answer to it. Now, on appeal, the department again raises the argument in its brief.
When you say they didn't defend on that, they didn't supply a mat. So their sole defense was there was a mat on the truck?
They didn't even address the word mat in their, well, they might have the word mat in their brief, but they did not deny they didn't provide mats. They did not deny that they didn't meet the elements. They simply didn't address the argument.
Counsel says the mats weren't on the truck, but they could have been obtained, and the workers had been trained to know that mats were to be used, and they should have called and gotten one when they discovered they didn't have one.
That argument is new.
Okay.
That was not raised at the Superior Court. Nor was that argument raised in their reply brief. They did assign error to the finding that there was no mat, but they provided no argument on it. And under NRA Estate Lint, cited in the department's brief, it's a verity on appeal. If the court wishes to go further and not end its inquiry on the first element, which it can, it did not communicate its safety rules to its employees. The manual it used has information from Texas on OSHA standards. It has incorrect information about gloves, and there was no testimony in the record that that difference was explained at the safety orientation. Absolutely, that was not Larry Roop's testimony. He did not testify to that. And in fact, there's an exhibit that has a checklist of what is discussed at that safety orientation, and that is not one of the items on that checklist. So that's simply not in the record. In any event, it was up to the trier of fact to weigh whether it was adequate. Information was provided, and the trier of fact did not decide that it was adequate. Secondly, Patelco points to a training that it did in 2006 on EPZ. This is the sole training that they provided in an EPZ that's found in the record. This event was in 2011. The foreman could not remember that he'd initially been trained in it at all. He then saw training records that said he had been trained in it. But in any event, the bottom line, even after he was refreshed that he had attended it, he said, "I didn't know that we couldn't just use bracket grounding." Clearly, the training was ineffective because it did not correct that fundamental misapprehension of what the standard is. And that testimony was corroborated by the lineman, Richards, who also worked as a foreman, that he didn't know. And he said it was standard practice to use bracket grounding, and they didn't use EPZ. If it's in fact true that the cowboy culture, that was the term used in the record, of not using EPZs, and that it was hard to get people to use the EPCs, Patelco should have provided more than one training from 2006, which it did after the event occurred at Tiger Mountain, but not before that. Thirdly,
a question about that. Is it clear that it's a violation of the safety regulations to use the bracket method rather than the mat?
Yes.
No question about that.
No question. It's page 22, 24, 76. It's a form of systems protective grounding. It's not a form of temporary personal protective grounding.
And there's no discretion in which method is used?
No, you have to have an equal potential zone. And that's part of the regulation. Patelco, third, did not take steps to correct and discover safety violations. They don't audit the nighttime call-outs. This is a nighttime call-out. The workers on a nighttime call-out doing whatever they're doing could very well understand that Patelco would never check up on them to make sure they weren't violating any number of rules. For that reason alone, the defense fails. Secondly, an EPZ event occurred, or violation occurred, just a few months short before that, in March of 2011. Not a single member of the crew was disciplined, and more importantly, I think, for preventing future misconduct, is there was no training to them to use an EPZ, nor training to other of the other people at Patelco. If, in fact, they're not using EPZ, there needs to be training to tell them to use it. So they fail on that element. And finally, they don't have a program that's effective in practice. I would say they haven't proven that they have a thorough safety program with necessary equipment. They haven't proven that they communicate safety rules. They haven't proven that they discover and correct violations. So they don't have a paper program that's adequate. But even if it was adequate, their very foreman is the one that didn't communicate the violation to the workers. There's a case law that says that with the involvement of a supervisory personnel, there's an inference of lack of enforcement. Surely here, where the foreman was not trained adequately, that inference is not rebutted. Patelco simply can't meet the defense on all four elements, and the department asks that this court affirm.
Thank you. You actually have 4.5 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'll be brief. I just would like to point out I disagree with some of the things that were in the record. Patelco and a safety coordinator put in testimony about the training they give on EPZs and, in fact, put an entire presentation that is used at that training, and it shows that it discusses mats and the proper way to set
things. Was it controverted whether they audit the night crews? Council represented that none of the safety measures taken by the night crews is audited by Patelco.
It's not night crews. Patelco has night crews who work regularly. and those crews are pre-scheduled. Sometimes they'll schedule a job that is at night. But for an emergency call out, the testimony was generally they're not inspected. For instance, here there was a car accident. And so when there's an emergency and they're not expecting to have a job site, those generally are not. Or well, the testimony was they're not
are you
inspected.
Using inspect is synonymous with audit? I mean, audit.
Right, yeah. Okay. I meant audit by the safety right. coordinator.
How do you say that you're implementing an effective safety program if you have an incident and you never check how one category of workers are behaving with respect to the regulation that was violated in the earlier incident?
And that's a good question. The response here is that it's a very small percentage of the job sites. And those same workers have normal shifts. They don't have only people who go to call outs. And for instance, like the employers
here
testify.
So is your answer that because we check what they do in non-emergency situations, we don't need to check what they do in emergency situations?
Or that they don't, yes. So if there are no further questions, those are all that I have.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, our final case, we're going to go back to the top of the calendar here, case number one, State of Washington.